Thank you, operator, and welcome everyone to today's call. This is Sally from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, and we are so thrilled to have you all join us. I just wanted to really quickly set out a little bit about how this call will work today, as well as why we decided to have this call. We really wanted to set up this call as a way to share information, and by share we meant not just a one-way directional sharing of us giving you information, but to find out from our peers and among our peers what you all are seeing and learning as well, which is why at the end of the call we'll make sure to open it up so people can jump in and share their own experiences. So today we're talking about qualifying education programs for DACA-eligible individuals that go beyond high school and college. As you all know, on this call, DACA remains the only avenue for undocumented individuals to affirmatively receive deportation on a large scale, so we're really hoping to encourage people to help as many as possible of the remaining population benefit from this program. With that in mind, we've been sending a series of emails with best practices tips for reaching and serving DACA applicants that we've collected from partners around the country, including many of you, and we are also hosting two calls, including today's, to focus on two areas we see of particular need. Today, we really are focusing on those young adults who could qualify for DACA but for needing a qualifying education program, and we'll spend the next hour talking about that. Just in terms of how we chose this as an area of need, new data came out from Migration Policy Institute in August that showed that there are about 1.3 million individuals currently eligible for DACA. Of those immediately eligible, about 63% have applied. However, there are close to an additional 400,000 individuals who could be eligible for DACA but need to meet the educational requirements to qualify. If we include those numbers as well, less than 48% of the eligible population have applied. Therefore, we're hosting today's call to discuss what educational programs qualify for DACA and where applicants have been successful in applying for that. I also wanted to note our second call will be next month in November on other communities that have not demonstrated high application rates. So what we've seen are persistently low rates among non-Mexicans in participating in DACA. And there has not been any change in that pattern in the last 4 years. We're talking about Asian Pacific Islanders, African immigrants, et cetera. So therefore, our next call will focus on, will actually include experts who've worked with API communities, African communities, and experts who've worked in rural, underserved, and at times hostile areas in Texas. And that call will be on Tuesday, November 15th at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern. Okay, so for today's call, what we'll do is we're going to share a little bit about the background and basics about qualifying education programs for DACA, what we know so far, and then we'd like to open it up at the end to listen to your questions, but also for you all to share what your experiences have been, where you've been successful in assisting clients with DACA who were your non-traditional students, and where you've really encountered obstacles. So I'm going to go over some of the basics. I also have on the call with us ILRC staff attorney Lena Graber, who many of you know. She's our in-house expert on DACA. She's only with us until about 1:45, so she needs to jump to another training at that point, but is here also to add detail and to answer questions. So let me go ahead and get started. First of all, as you all know, because I recognize many of your names as folks who do DACA, the vast majority of people who've qualified for DACA are either high school students or high school graduates or college students. However, there are other qualifying education programs that could qualify someone for DACA. These are outlined in the FAQs issued by USCIS and to a lesser extent in standard operating procedures for DACA, which were somewhat released earlier but probably have been updated and then not released publicly. So this information is not always that easy to find. Mostly they're found in USCIS's frequently asked questions. What we know are that there are other programs that could qualify for someone for DACA, and they mainly fall into three categories. Let me mention that these three categories you can see in the handout we shared as three columns on the handout that says DACA Educational Programs at the top. This handout was included in an email. If you have not received it or if you don't have access to it currently, you can email us to send it to you right now. The email is ilrc.best.practices plural, @gmail.com. Email us at ilrc.best.practices@gmail.com, and we'll email it to you right now. It's currently in draft form because we will update it and revise it based on feedback you give us today, as well as other learnings that we get from you. So as you'll see on there, there are three other categories that could help someone qualify for DACA, even if they're not a high school student or a college student. So to back up, if someone has finished high school or is a current student, they qualify for DACA. We want to focus today on adults who didn't finish high school. So, for example, Javier came to the United States when he was 14 years old, went straight to work in a restaurant, and never went to school here in the United States. At this point, he's been here for 10 years, and he wants to know if he qualifies for DACA or what his options might be. Currently, he wouldn't qualify for DACA because he did not graduate from high school, nor is he a current student here in the United States. Here's another example. Soyoung came from Korea. She went to high school here in the United States, but she dropped out. Would she qualify for DACA, or what are her options? In this case, even though Soyoung went to high school here in the United States, because she didn't graduate from high school and is not currently a student, she also doesn't qualify for DACA. But Javier and Soyoung might be eligible or be able to take advantage of some of the other options that exist. So what are those three main avenues to qualify? The first broadly falls into a category of programs with the purpose of improving English, math, or literacy. The second category are other subjects or vocational education or job skills courses designed to lead to job placement or college secondary education or on-the-job training. And the third category are courses that lead to either a GED or other high school completion equivalent. There are some courses that might fit into multiple categories, and that's fine too. They might both help improve someone's English, math, or literacy and lead to a GED. A couple of key things to keep in mind about these requirements. Adult immigrants who haven't finished high school may have limited education, so they might have a hard time getting into, say, a high school completion or GED program, but there might be other programs, such as a literacy program, that's not at the high school level, but might be at their level. Also, literacy does not necessarily mean English literacy. In other words, it could be possibly Chinese literacy, Spanish literacy, Arabic literacy, etc. So this might also be an important option for people who are not prepared for ESL. Career training and vocational programs can be in a lot of different subjects or skills. In this case, it's important to show that the program is designed for job placement or college and that your client is working toward that placement, so it has a slightly higher burden of proof. Also, the FAQs talk about requirements for sources of funding or demonstrated effectiveness for this program. Basically, what the FAQs say is that if the program is publicly funded or run by a nonprofit agency, then it is assumed to meet the demonstrated effectiveness requirement. You don't need to show additional proof. However, if the program, like the job training program, is privately funded or a for-profit program, you should be prepared to provide additional proof of demonstrated effectiveness. So if you look at what we sent in the handout, on the third page, there's also a chart that gives some examples of programs that might qualify. So what you'll see are five categories, the first one being adult schools. These are often run out of school districts that offer GED, ESL, reading, math, and other adult basic education. And they're often very affordable or free and widely available. However, sometimes their funding may limit the number of spaces they have in a class that are available. Another common category are community colleges where transitional studies or similar high school completion is offered. Sometimes these can be credit-bearing courses or go on the person's individual permanent academic record. The non-credit ones, at least here in California, tend to be cheaper or free. The third category is career or technical education. That's a common term for vocational or occupational programs. They can be expensive, particularly if they're a for-profit or privately funded program, but they can be very good training. Some of those programs ultimately to seek that career may require a license in your state, so you also want to check your state licensing requirements if immigration status impacts someone's ability ultimately to seek that career. There are also library literacy programs. Here in California, for example, the public libraries often run literacy programs. They may qualify if they have a system of enrollment that satisfies USCIS. This is often a good option, or could be a good option, for folks who live in more rural areas or want a less formal program that might be more customizable to their own schedule and needs. And then there are nonprofit charities or social services who often offer also English or literacy or other classes. These can often be accessible and affordable, but make sure to avoid ones that are citizenship classes because they are unlikely to qualify for someone for DACA. I know I went through that quickly, but I want to remind you all that it is in the handout that we provided so that you don't have to wear out your hand taking notes on that. Also, we wanted to highlight that a GED program does not need to be offered in English, so we have seen people qualify for DACA through a Spanish language GED program. And in terms of the program's duration, there's no prescribed amount of time that the course must last for the applicant to qualify for DACA. However, the applicant must be enrolled in the qualifying education program at the time of their DACA filing. And just a practice tip around that, some of our partners have shared with us that they have clients who've gotten into a qualifying education program and then started putting together their documents for DACA. And assembling their documents for DACA took so long that by the time they were ready to apply, the course had ended. So you want to make sure to sequence the timing of that correctly so that you can have your person both apply for DACA at the same time they're in that qualifying education program. Finally, what we know about denials on the basis of not meeting a qualifying education program, we found that people who didn't have current proof at the time of applying, like I just mentioned, received denials, as well as people who've been in self-driven or online programs, especially if they were run by a for-profit program. Those are also the kinds of cases that we've seen denials. That's a quick overview of qualifying education programs for DACA. Before we open it up to the audience, I wanted to see, Lena, if you wanted to share additional thoughts or tips for folks.
Thanks, Sally. No, that was a really good overview. I think part of our goal in laying this out and trying to make it more accessible was that the USCIS FAQs about education programs are kind of confusing and repetitive, and so we were trying to really parse them out and make it feel like you could understand what they were talking about, and then to look at, for immigration practitioners, what kinds of adult education programs are out there that we should be knowing about or referring people to or looking for. And obviously that's going to depend location to location. There's all kinds of different things, but we want to lay out some general categories that people should have an eye on. And finally, the goal is to especially explore adult education programs that might be accessible to people who are, you know, working parents who can't imagine going back to school, who need to know that going back to school doesn't mean being a full-time student, but that there are adult education programs that are really interested in and committed to working with them to improve their education. And so we're learning and trying to understand what types of those programs can still qualify for someone for DACA and what level of formality and structure will get people in the door that both meets their needs and meets their qualifications for DACA from USCIS.
Great. Right. Just to echo what Lena had said, where we sit here in California, we've certainly talked to public libraries, school districts with adult education programs, and others, vocational ed programs, who are very interested in working with their immigrant community members to find out how these programs, which are helping their community members in other ways, gain literacy or job training, et cetera, how they may also help their students access immigration benefits under DACA. So what we'd like to do is hear from you all. I want to, before we open up the call, share some of the questions that we have for you, just to trigger if any of you have been working on some of these issues. If you could please share with us what you've seen, as well as we'd also like to take questions from you. So let me share some of the questions that Lena and I have about these qualifying education programs. Of course, we're just generally interested among you all if you have gotten DACA for a client with an adult basic education program and what you can share with all of us about that program. How formal was it? What kind of documentation were you required or able to put together? How did you work with your adult ed program and your client to make sure it all fit together? For those of you who've tried this, we'd love to hear what kinds of things you've received an RFE or request for more evidence on. We'd love to hear about other examples of non-traditional DACA cases. We had a meeting recently in San Francisco where people talked about, for example, clients who were developmentally disabled and therefore did not finish a regular high school program, but were nonetheless able to complete high school or get a high school equivalency. We wanted to see if anyone has tried a financial literacy program as a program for the purpose of which was to improve math. What programs or partners have you found to be best at working with that provide qualifying education programs and are good at working with undocumented immigrants? We wanted to see if anyone has applied for DACA based on enrollment in a cosmetology school. Here in California, this year we have a new law that allows undocumented immigrants to get professional licenses. The number one license that people have applied for under this program is cosmetology, so we're curious to see if anyone has tried that. We're also curious to see, what about other kinds of classes? Personal enrichment classes don't count for DACA, but have there been other kinds of cooking classes or other kinds of skilled classes that maybe people have tried and have succeeded with? And finally, what other kinds of outreach have you found that's been effective to try to reach DACA individuals who are not your traditional high school or college students? So those are some of the questions. We thought we could spend the next half hour or so opening up the line to really share amongst each other what you all have seen and what kind of questions you have. So if you could please, when you are called upon to share your question, your experience, share your organization and where you're located, that would be great. So operator, we can go ahead and take the first call.
And thank you. If you'd like to add a comment or offer any feedback, you can press star, then one. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. So I'm standing by. If you'd like to offer any comments, you can press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And speakers, if there's anyone who you would like me to open up their line individually, I can do that as well.
Well, while we're waiting for our first call, I'm wondering if you have some examples that you could share, Lena, of cases that you've seen where people have been successful.
Many of us have done the DACA workshops where kids send in their school transcripts, and that's the easiest and most successful evidence. And I've seen lots of other adults that were enrolled in ESL classes have qualified. I think most of those have been through, public adult schools or community colleges. There are various nonprofits that work with the immigrant population in other ways and so are particularly skilled at fielding immigrants into their educational programs and then applying for DACA for them at the same time if they have a sort of multifaceted service program. The ones that we, I think you mentioned this before, Sally, the ones that we have seen RFE'd or denied have often been for-profit schools, and especially if they were online or involved kind of you finish high school with these online courses on your own time kind of program where people have paid them. There's a lot of those programs are often not a great deal in terms of the money that a person puts in and the education they get out to begin with.
Great, thank you. And operator, go ahead and let us know if there are any calls along the way. Otherwise, I can go ahead and share an example as well.
Thank you. Please proceed. As a reminder, if you have a comment or feedback, you can press star, then one.
So as I mentioned, here in San Francisco, we had a meeting recently, an in-person meeting, where we were able to talk to our local partners about what they've seen. And one of our legal services partners, who's located in an area that's somewhat rural, said that they had a student or a client who was enrolled in an adult school program, but by the time she was ready to submit her application, the class actually didn't exist at all because they didn't have enough students for the class, for the adult school program to continue offering the class. So she was able to go to her local public library and enroll in a GED class and got a letter from the library as proof of her enrollment and participation in that class, and she was able to be approved for her DACA.
One
Yes, we do have a question. Is it okay for me to proceed?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Looks like we have our first question or comment from Maria Cava. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, my name is Maria Cava, and I'm calling from Atlas DIY. We're a nonprofit based in New York. My experience with DACA, I am a DACA recipient, and I also am the director of outreach here at Atlas, and so I've worked with many city contracts to reach DACA eligible young people. I know you asked this question for us, but I was hoping that maybe you can help me get some insight. So just to give you a little background, back in 2012 and 2013, and 2014, DYCD along with New York Immigration Coalition and there was a third component, I think MOYA, the mayor's office, funded a DACA initiative where there were three components. There was an outreach component, adult literacy provider component, and the legal component. And so Atlas served as the outreach component, and so we had approximately over 1,500 people that we were able to, like, screen, and many of them were determined to be eligible for DACA. 80 of them were non-traditional students, were people that, you know, either came to this country and dropped out of school and had to go to work, or maybe came to this country and were never able to finish their high school diploma. And so through that initiative, they were able to get all, you know, they were able to get the information about DACA, they were able to enroll in a GED or ESL program, and then they were able to get the legal assistance to receive the help. And so we didn't work closely with the legal department, I can't speak on the amount of, on the total of people that were approved. I can say that we followed up with many of those, people, and they were, the people that we were able to contact did say that they were able to move forward and get approved and do have DACA. However, the mayor's office has now launched a very similar program, and it's specifically targeted for this community. And so it's called DACA Ed, and this is an initiative that is for people that are eligible for DACA except that they do not meet the educational component. And so as an outreach provider, now we're responsible for going out into the communities and finding this population. And so we have encountered many challenges because, as you can imagine, it's not so easy to find this community. And so I was, you know, I'm very interested to hear any insight, best practices on, you know, obviously I don't think there's this magic equation of where this community is at, but I'm wondering if there has been any research done, or if there anyone that has like experience in reaching these communities, like where are these communities, like where can we find them, and how can we reach them?
Thanks, Maria. Great. That was a great question. I'll jump in, and then Sally, you can
great.
Add.
Thank you.
I don't know about research, and it's a really good question, but one of the things that sort of launched me down this path of trying to expand what we think of as a qualifying education program and what beyond a GED or an ESL class might also work was my sister told me that she used to volunteer as a teacher of mostly literacy, for sort of more basic literacy and a little bit of ESL, for a library program that was actually in an apartment building that was in an immigrant community, and so there was a lot of immigrants, documented, undocumented, mixed citizens in that area. And so the value of that class was that it was extremely accessible to working parents who aren't going out to look for a school program. And I think the nature of a lot of those more social services, let's teach some basic parenting courses and some basic literacy or financial literacy classes is to just give more sort of life skills for living in the U.S. But to me, I thought that's probably not quite formal enough. Like, nobody enrolls in that. They just attend. So it might not qualify you for DACA, but they might be able to work with the library that was hosting it and establish a little more formality or a system of enrollment and tracking attendance such that people could consider it an educational program for DACA. And so that's certainly what came to mind when you asked your classes is, or your question is, have you talked to some of those outreach programs that are trying to do more basic education or like parenting skills or things that they are targeting the immigrant community, not for immigration services or even specifically to get them into a GED or college, but at a more light touch level?
This is Sally. I just wanted to add a couple of things that we've found in our experimenting within California. One is that, you know, we found that there are many people who don't identify with the DACA program, and it mainly runs the gamut of the folks who haven't yet applied, obviously, Asian Pacific Islanders who mistakenly thought the program was only for Latinos or specifically for Mexicans, as well as people who didn't fit into what they had heard of as what Dreamers are. And we here in California have found that certainly included people who didn't go to high school or college that didn't realize they were eligible for this program, but even people who were in college that thought you had to be really a high-achieving valedictorian or kind of top-of-your-class type person to be eligible for DACA. So, you know, we're trying to figure out how to reach people to really broaden the definition of in terms of their own self-perception of who DACA is for. Some of the things that we found in California is that in 2012, 2013, when this program was first announced, we really looked in our rural areas as a place to develop qualifying education programs or to explore more. What we found at that time was because of the recession and the way education is funding is structured in California, our adult education programs were pretty decimated, and so even if they had GED or ESL classes, they didn't have space for people. The thing that was encouraging about that was that they didn't have space because there was a lot of interest in ESL and GED. So, you know, looking at what New York has done, it's been a great model for us because in New York, not only did you have outreach to drive people to those programs, but then you had funding so that there would be chairs open in classrooms for them. What we found in California is that it's a great place to do outreach. It's hard to know which of those students is in need of DACA. You know, many of the students that already have immigration status are U.S. citizens, et cetera. But the other place then that we've looked where people already are libraries. So here in California, we're very fortunate that the libraries also generally are really good partners. So the libraries have become a place where people congregate for all sorts of resources, not just to check out books, but to get other kinds of information. And, you know, where people can get GED or ESL while having their children attend story time or while getting other resources. So I'm actually really curious to hear from you when you did find the 80 non-traditional and we're looking at persuading them to get into an adult ed program, what did you use to help persuade them? Because in our early days of finding people and saying, hey, you know, if you get into a program, you could qualify for DACA, it was difficult for people. You know, if they worked full-time and had children and or had, you know, limited means and complex lives, it seemed overwhelming to a lot of them to get into an adult education program. So, Maria, if you're still on and you want to jump in, would love to hear more about how you persuaded people or if they were already in those adult ed programs. And also, for anyone else, if you have other tips to share with Maria, we'd love to hear them. I think we could all learn from it.
Just to confirm, Maria, your line's still open?
Thank you. I'm still here. So like I mentioned before, I'm a DACA recipient. Well, I was a DACA recipient. And so ATLAS is a youth empowerment cooperative, and so the way we reach our community, I think, is very unique. And so one of our pillars is storytelling, right? So just going out into the communities and sharing your story. And so my story is extremely, it's kind of like a unicorn, right? I migrated from this country when I was 2 years old from the Dominican Republic. I lived in this country for over 25 years undocumented, even though I was eligible for my green card at the age of 8, except I didn't find out until I was 27. And so through the process of applying for DACA was when I found out, right? And so many times when I'm meeting these people, absolutely, like, that's one of the first things they say is, I work full-time, I have a family, you know? And so for me, because of everything that I've lived and I've experienced, and then working with the young people we work here at Atlas, and hearing their stories, and many of them, you know, kind of having very similar stories to myself, like going from undocumented to having some form of status, and just, you know, figuring out what that means for them. I know what it is to live in the shadows and be afraid and have this sense of, you know, not knowing when your next paycheck is going to be, like, how am I going to pay for my bills? How am I going to, you know, meet my needs and take care of my family? But I also know the benefits that you gain when you take that risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is, right? It's a huge risk you're taking. And so what I do is that I share my story. You know, if I bring a young person to an event with me, you know, if the young person feels safe, they share their stories. And I think that really gives people hope. And I think that it motivates them. And I also try to make myself accessible. If they are, you know, afraid, or if they have any more questions, you know, I say, hey, you can call me back and speak to me. But that's kind of like what I feel like I use to reach the community is that power of, you know, I was just like you a couple of years ago. And also, the city did an amazing job with the initiative, and I was able to meet many of these organizations and build trust. So I knew that they were going to be in good hands. And I think that level of trust just really, like, motivated and really kind of, like, helped them push through that feeling of, you know, either I go and get this screening and sign up for this ESL class, or, you know, I work and I live in that fear, right? And so I think that's what we do, and that's what makes our outreach strategy a little unique.
That's so great. It's so inspiring, Maria. And I'm wondering, have you captured that, you know, we're 3,000 miles away from you. Have you captured that story in a way that can be replicated in other areas? Like, made a video of you or of other folks that you've worked with?
We haven't. So even though, it's so funny because I feel like when people come visit our space, it seems that we have been around for a very long time, but we're still a pretty small nonprofit. And so we haven't, been able to give stories like myself, like that platform. But that's something mm-hmm. that as we're transitioning into growing, we're interested in.
Mhm. I think you touched upon a couple of things that we've heard a lot from other folks, which is that the hearing from someone who's been through it is really key to people, you know, to know, is this something, so for some people, is this safe? For some people, it's like, is this actually going to result in something on the other end? For some people, it's like, is this something I could do? Like, can I get the papers together? Could I get in a program like that? And then another thing that you touched upon is really focusing on the benefits, because it's scary or risky seeming to some people, or it's just seems like a lot of work to some people. Is it worth it? So focusing on the benefits is really key. And another thing that we've heard in multiple areas of immigration is that we can really inadvertently discourage clients by mistake by making it seem like a lot of work. It's really complex, or it's really, you have to be really careful about this or that, or make sure you get into the correct program, because if you get in the wrong one, you'll be denied. Like, sometimes we don't want people to waste their time. We want to make sure they go the right path, but we also want to make it seem easy and doable. And knowing someone like Maria or others who've done it, and to focus on, like, you can do it. It is hard for people to get into a qualifying education program sometimes, but there might be one that's a good fit for them. And maybe it's not high school, and maybe it's not college. Maybe it's a literacy class. Maybe it's a job training. So I think really focusing on those. Maria, we might follow up with you about some folks we know who are willing to and interested in capturing stories. So maybe we will all get to see a video of Maria someday.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Are there other questions or comments that people have, experiences to share?
I am standing by for further questions or comments.
This is a shy group. Well, I know that we have to say goodbye to Lena in a couple minutes. So while we're waiting to see if anyone has anything else to share, Lena, do you have any final thoughts or questions for the group before you jump off?
I was trying to think of any. I don't really, but I wanted to just repeat a couple of the questions that Sally laid out at the beginning of the call and that maybe you can touch base on, because we would love to know, especially if anyone has applied for, helped someone apply for DACA, who was in a program that they weren't sure would qualify, that felt a little borderline because of its lack of structure, or that it was through a non-traditional education program, like a library education. We've seen a couple examples where that works, but we'd love to know what pushes the boundaries. And similarly, I'm curious about some of the vocational programs that have worked. Again, those are rarely free, and so they may be less accessible for a lot of people. But we do see lots of people applying, especially for things like cosmetology school or programs to be medical assistants or electricians, and wondering what experiences people have had with USCIS's response to that in particular, or just if you've heard from people that that works.
Oh, pardon me. We do have a few questions in queue. We now have a question or comment from Laura Vesquez. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Laura Vesquez at NCLR, and thanks for putting together this session. I did have a question about the enrollment and application sequencing. I had heard in a couple of the areas that applicants had received RFEs if it seemed that their client had enrolled in an education program in a time that was very close to when their application had been submitted, and I just wondered if others had seen that that had resulted in RFEs. I think that might be something that we could do some advocacy around with USCIS. If this is something that, you know, we need to show to USCIS that, you know, people are enrolling in these programs not just simply to get DACA, but they, you know, intend to complete them for the benefits of the programs as well.
Anyone else seen an RFE like that?
Oh, pardon me. I would need to release Laura's line. Is it okay for me to do that?
Sure. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Because we do have another question in queue from Sandra Cruz. Sandra, did you have something to add? Oh, sorry. Just to confirm, Sandra, it looks like you had something to add, so I opened up your line.
Sandra, feel free to jump in at any minute. What, maybe one thing I'll mention in response to Laura's comment and question. I have not heard about RFEs for people who are enrolled very close to application time, but we have heard, depending on the area and region, of maybe similar problems, which was there was one region where we heard about an adult education opportunity that was available to people, and actually people did go and enroll in what was basically a farm worker GED program and applied for DACA and then subsequently dropped out. So they did enroll quite close in time and then dropped out. And I'm not exactly sure everything that happened, but it actually became a problem for that GED program, who their federal funding was dependent on the number of people who graduated from that program. And so they ran into problems and were kind of upset because all of a sudden they had all these students, which was great for them, and then they realized, oh, they're not sticking around. And this was years ago, so the timeline was much quicker. People weren't waiting as long for approvals. And I'm not exactly sure how that got on the radar of USCIS, that they seem to all of a sudden get more suspicious about certain programs. So I don't know, Laura, if you want to jump on, if you've noticed also a similar type pattern, if it's mainly the timing or if it's also the program, It seems like sometimes USCIS has some awareness of certain trends and things. So if Laura wants to jump back on, or Sandra is ready.
Sandra, perhaps you're muted on your end?
Oh, yes, sorry.
Please go ahead.
I didn't have anything to add for this question. So should I wait to ask this my question when...
No, go ahead, Sandra.
Okay. My question is regarding the non-credit aspect of community colleges and what that means compared to a credit program. We actually were approached to work with a local community college, and they offer non-credit programs in the community, so like in churches and libraries and schools. So there's a difference and what that means. And I am from Service Immigrant Rights and Education Network in San Jose.
So, Sandra, here in California, what we understand is that, for example, community colleges offer credit-bearing classes that go on people's permanent records so people can get an associate's degree or transfer to a four-year university, et cetera. And then there are all sorts of non-credit classes, some of which are personal enrichment, but some of which, you know, personal enrichment meaning like pottery or, you know, things like that, which would not qualify for DACA. However, if they still fit into the prong of, you know, leading to job training, career placement, a job skills program or secondary education or one of these other prongs like English literacy or math, even if it's not for credit, it could, if it meets one of those purposes, it could qualify the person. And because it's publicly funded, if it's at a community college, it shouldn't need to meet the demonstrated effectiveness prong. Some of the challenges I think that get faced are does it have the kind of same kind of enrollment that another college class would, that the person can show that they were enrolled and that they attended a program that did lead to English literacy or job skills, et cetera. I know you mentioned you're from Siren, which is in San Jose, California. We would love here at the ILRC to follow up with you. If you have students that are in a class that it's not clear through a non-credit, say, literacy program or something, that it would qualify, and they're nervous about the filing fee if it turns out they might not be eligible, we'd be interested in seeing if maybe we could provide funding to at least pay for the filing fee so that we could test a case like that and see what kind of response we get from USCIS.
Thank you so much.
Any other thoughts or comments? Go ahead, operator. Sorry.
I'm just going to remind people you can press star, then one.
One final question?
Okay. Oh, yeah. You know what? They queued up just now. Okay.
All right.
I'm going to... Sure. I'm now going to open up the line of Oscar Gonzalez. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to add my 2 cents worth. I know that one of the challenges was locating, identifying, and establishing those relationships with those kids out there that weren't able to finished their high school education and went right to work soon after coming over to this country, however which way they came. And many of them that I've encountered have actually walked. They've told me all kinds of stories, horrendous stories of what it took, not so much to get over the U.S. border, but more so the Central American border. But my point was is that they're working. They're in the restaurants, in the back of the restaurants. They're in the most menial jobs, going from one job to the other, and they also attend church. So I guess my approach would be much more grassroots oriented and trying to go out and locate. And once you find one, they usually know where others, you know, of a similar plight, where they may be in terms of, again, identifying and beginning to establish that rapport so that services and eligibility requirements could be discussed. And I'm with the Latino Community Association of Central Oregon, calling from Bend, Oregon.
Great. Oscar, have you had any success in working with any of those youth to get into a program or to apply for DACA?
Actually, the one that I encountered recently, I offered to him the fact that we offer English classes on Saturday mornings, and he actually had come to us wanting to volunteer and help us in our mission and vision, which was outstanding. But, you know, he, I think, believe was 21 years old, had been working here since he was maybe 15 or 16, and really hasn't seen the light of day because he's been working so much, you know, and trying to move forward with his life and everything else. So I encouraged him and also to look into his eligibility with DACA, but because I believe that our English programs would definitely qualify under, you know, the standards that y'all have laid forth.
That's great. And as a reminder, there are 400,000, almost 400,000 young people like the one Oscar described, who are often working and could benefit, obviously, from getting a legal work permit. And so it is kind of reaching them where they're at as well as with what seems like a benefit to them. And if he's already interested in that ESL program or working with you and trust you, that's a great place to start. Operator, maybe we can take one more call or question.
We do not have any further in queue, but if you'd like to queue up, it is star then one, and I'm standing by.
Great. I also, while we're waiting to see if there's another question, I wanted to mention that here in California, the Workforce Opportunity Investment Act has been changed to allow some workforce development to work with people who don't have Social Security numbers, which at least here in California may create more opportunities for job training and other programs for undocumented individuals, as well as the state is really looking at this issue. What we're talking about today, the California, there are a few California departments that are looking at this, including the Department of Social Services, which has $40 million to invest in immigration services next year, as well as the Labor Board. So they're really looking also at how to reach and serve this community and link these immigration services and workforce development opportunities. So we hope to see more information out of them as well as more guidance as to places we can refer people to or to reach people where they already are. Operator, if there are no further questions, I'll wrap it up unless there is someone currently in queue.
We actually have one more question. Looks like our last question is going to come from Leah Suksai. Please go ahead, Leah.
Hi, my name is Leah Suksai. I work with Conexión Américas in Nashville, Tennessee, and I actually manage our DACA workshops and our adult education program. So I'm kind of in both
Perfect.
Of the worlds on this conference call. So I'm wondering more on the adult education side. We have a fairly large ESL program that reaches a lot of people. What can I do to make sure that my program qualifies for people for DACA, or how are there certain requirements? How do I know if our program is at the level where it's of demonstrated effectiveness, or does that not apply for a nonprofit? How does that work?
Leah, is your program publicly funded?
It's mostly funded by private grants.
So is it a nonprofit
mm-hmm.
program? So what we found is that this is not clearly defined or well-defined in the FAQs. However, it's very jumbled in the FAQs. And we're attorneys here at the ILRC, so we feel like an argument can be made that if it's publicly funded, you don't need to show demonstrated effectiveness. Now, yours sounds like it's mainly privately funded. However, nonprofits have often been able to also show that they don't need to meet the demonstrated effectiveness. Partly that's because a lot of nonprofits are publicly funded. For those that are privately funded, demonstrative effectiveness may include things like more detail about the level of enrollment, if there's any admissions process, which there probably isn't, but what kind of testing do you do? Like, how do you show that, I'm sorry, yours is mainly an ESL program, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some measure to show that people are gaining more English language skills at the other end? So those are the kinds of things they might look at, like is there any kind of testing or placement to next level of English language skills, or if there's any kind of progress that's tracked.
Okay. Yeah. And is that something that someone would need to submit with their DACA application to prove that they're growing in their English skills, or would as an organization submit it with?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. The organization, so they'll need to get something from the program or far more about the program that can demonstrate that effectiveness, and the applicant will have to submit it at the time of DACA, the DACA application. We would definitely recommend that you do it at that time, because you don't want your client to get a request for evidence 6 months down the road or several months down the road, and at that point they're not in it, the class anymore, for whatever reason. So we can also look for templates for programs that have successfully been approved to see if maybe that might be helpful to a program like yours.
That would be great.
And one quick question for you, Leah, before I let you go. Of, you know, you said you sit at sort of this cross-section of immigration services and ESL. How do you have a sense of how many folks in your programs might qualify as a DACA person within your ESL programs?
You know what? I'm not actually that sure. I know that there are our programs and our organizations stretch across a wide array of ages and populations and immigration statuses, but primarily within the Latino population. I know there have been a good number of adults in my English classes whose children have qualified for DACA, but I'm actually very curious now to start asking some of my my ESL students, specifically ones who have been in the United States for a long time and are on the younger side, to see if they might qualify.
Yeah, and one thing that that I would maybe experiment with is that, you know, a lot of folks have DACA workshops, which have been really successful, but sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, people don't identify with that. So you might say, oh, you know, you're taking ESL, you might be eligible for DACA, you might come to this thing, and people might automatically be like, oh, yeah, that's what my cousin got, my cousin who's, like, now in college or something. Like, they just, but if you frame it more like, hey, you know, there's an there is a program where you could get a work permit if you've been here, you know, for what at this point is 9 years and you're between this age and this age. If they've been here for the requisite amount of time and they are within the age range and they're already sitting in one of your ESL programs, and tell them, hey, you should be screened to find out if you might be eligible for a work permit.
Yeah.
Or however, whatever is going to be most appealing to them. Or a social security number. Or the ability to get advanced parole and travel home. You know what I mean? Like all those benefits.
Yeah.
As opposed to talking about it as DACA.
Yeah.
So I would really encourage people to try to frame it that way with this audience who we're trying to reach, who 4 years in, if they haven't already identified with DACA, with a changing presidency and other things, I don't think our existing methods are going to convince them now. So.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that, Leah. We'd love to hear back anything that you can share, and also follow up with us, and we'll try to get you some templates to see if we can find other folks who might have ones that have been successful.
Yeah, thank you very much for that.
So I want to thank everyone on this call for joining us. If you didn't have a chance to call in and you have questions, or especially if you have examples that you want to share that come up now, maybe after today you found a message that really resonates with people or a program that seems to be working really well, please share that with us. As I mentioned, we have an email address you can email. It's ilrc.best.practices@gmail.com. Please share with us any examples you come up with after this. And we are sending out these emails with best practice tips. We'll try to share them as we send them out. I also wanted to remind people of something I spoke about earlier today, which is that we have this really great another next call on Tuesday, November 15th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, at which time we're going to really be talking about how to reach the hard-to-reach, hard-to-serve, hard-to-reach. And we're going to focus by having an expert, Zhu Hong, who's worked with API communities. We're going to focus on an expert who's worked with African communities in New York. And we're going to also focus on serving rural and underserved communities in at what sometimes are hostile environments in Texas. So we're really excited to have a set of experts on a panel joining us on that call in November. So thank you again. You'll be hearing from us. We really invite you to share also what you've seen so that we can spread it among all the advocates to hopefully really continue to increase the DACA application rates. And thank you so much for all the work you've done. We have a lot to be proud of in our field. So thank you, operator. I think that ends the call.